Welcome to the 25th episode of Who's Editing, a thought experiment in which my guests and I appoint ourselves editors of a comic book line at DC Comics, but the joke's on us because we can only use the characters of a specific issue of Who's Who, and in fact, must use them. I'm Siskoid, and I'll let you in on all the rules, but first, my guests with which to create a line of books based on Who's Who number 25 from the Rad Network. It's Ruth and Darren Sutherland. Been a while. How are you guys?
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
It has been a while since we've had a chance to chat, so this is really fun. We're looking forward to it.
We're coming up to the end. For you, it's your first try. For me, it's my 25th. Coming to the end of this first volume of Who's Who Anyways. What were the challenges for you? How tough was this?
Oh, I loved the prep for this, and I would say I would find the challenges for me is what elements to keep. Like what superpowers to preserve or tools or maybe elements of a costume to keep for the new lineup or what to leave behind. So some of those decisions there were my challenges.
And I think for me, challenges, it's I've always told Ruth and other people too will sometimes tell me, oh, you would make a good writer. And my answer is always, no, I really would not make a good writer. I would make a good editor because I'm not a good ideas person, but I'm sort of a good smoothing things over person and proofreading and all that sort of stuff. So for me, just coming up with unique and original ideas was a bit challenging. And especially when it involved Jack Kirby's Fourth World, because while I love his art, I really never read much of the Fourth World. And there were a few of those in here. So it was like, oh, all right. I really have to strain to remember this person.
I imagine it's not harder to do it with two people. You're there for one another. You're supporting each other in the process. But we've only had a duo before. I just wonder, is it like, do people come up with multiple ideas because there's two of you? Or did you split these up in the first place? What was the process?
That's a good question. I was telling Darren before we got together tonight that this was really a team effort and I could not have done it alone. So it really took a lot of back and forth of here's an idea that then sparks another idea, or maybe Darren had a basic idea that I could take and run, but you know, I was drawing a blank at the start on a particular character. So there was really a lot of back and forth. And I think it came together in a nice way.
Yeah, I agree. We really had two brainstorming sessions, I would think. One pretty early on after you first gave it to us. We sort of did a brainstorming session and came up with a rough first draft. And then we sort of needed to take a break from it and came back a couple of weeks later and did another brainstorming session. It was a lot of fun and it was interesting. I think maybe I came up with like the initial nugget of an idea for probably 2/3 of them. And you came up with the original idea for the ones that I was just completely at a loss for.
Yeah.
And then sometimes we would, when we were going back and forth and adding things, because we would go back and forth and I would add something to hers or she would add something to mine. And that was a lot of fun. And then the other thing is sometimes it would be like, I couldn't think of an idea, but I would say, you know, Ruth, you really enjoy reading title such and such. And I think that would be a nice parallel to this. What do you think? So it was fun to do it that way. It was a really neat thing to do.
And of course, I invited you guys on this one because Warlord is in it.
Yes.
Right? That's one of your big characters. Is that intimidating? Because I've had people, like I remember Paul Hicks had no idea what to do with the Doom Patrol. Because he has a show on the Doom Patrol. He's read it all. He's seen it all. Maybe he was intimidated by it, but he couldn't really come up with anything original. Was Warlord a particular, oh, we got to get this one right?
I would say it was exciting because we absolutely love that character. We knew we couldn't improve on like what was there. So we had to go very different for that.
And it was interesting because, you know, Mike Grell did such a variety of stories in the Warlord. We were able to sort of take a nugget of an idea that, oh, you know, Mike would have done something like this for a story arc. We can just sort of spin it off and make it its own title.
All right. Well, and to tell the folks as well, some of the challenges from just the draw of entries, there's sure a lot of Vikings in this one. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of characters not native to the contemporary era or the contemporary DC universe. We also have the problem of characters with the same code names to deal with. So we had our work cut out for us. One more time, here are the rules. Each episode of Who's Editing goes by. Our line of books must include a monthly series from every hero, character, or team featured, as well as any non-HQ location. We can give a villain or other entry their own series, but we can only do that for one single villain from the issue. Titles don't have to match the entries, of course. note that myself and the Sutherlands here are pitching our own ideas, so we'll end up with two possible lines of books. Listeners, you decide which books you'd actually want to read. And we'll actually play that game, as we'll each have enough money to buy one title from the other editor's line. And I'll give you each your pocket money, so you can each have your own book. So let's talk strategy. Did you have one going into this?
I would say one thing that I know we drew upon was our love of adventure, fantasy, and science fiction. You know, sure, we like superhero comics, but those other genres have a lot of inspiration for us both, I think.
Yeah, so I think for us, and maybe that was a good thing for what you were sort of talking about with the challenges in this one, Siskoid, which is there were a lot of maybe non-traditional superheroes in this, and we were able to say, you know, hey, we can imagine these characters in something other than a superhero title, you know, maybe a science fiction title or a historical adventure title or something a little funny title. So it made it easier for us because it was like, oh yeah, we can really do something different with these characters because they're not the typical superheroes.
We certainly like diversity at this on this show. I went with an overarching story for this one called Our World's at War. I'm going to reuse a DC IP. And in the whatever last big crossover event just happened before I took over, it was revealed that the reason the Vegan system was always at war is because of an ancient artifact called the Omega Stone, in honor of the Omega Men. You know. By the end of the event, the Omega Stone has been smuggled to Earth, which causes a kind of World War III that involves the DCU's fictional countries, magical lands. War World finds a spot in our solar system, and it also summons warriors from the past. There are conflicts all over. This will last about a year, and then we'll see what series can continue in and in what form. Not all books will connect to this directly, but most. So that's my idea. You'll see how it manifests. With issue 25 of Who's Who, we have to include a minimum of 19 books in our line and a maximum of 20. I'm going to hand it off to you first, Darren and Ruth, and we'll do a bit of back and forth in entry order and keep our bonus villain series, if any, to the end. So we start with The Unknown Soldier. Where did you go with this?
All right. For The Unknown Soldier, we thought, let's give this a modern-day sort of espionage spin, because we love espionage stories. So we thought an adventure book where he uses his disguises and his foreign language skills around the globe, sort of, you know, being a little bit adventurous and a little bit stealthy. Going around the globe, rescuing hostages, infiltrating terrorist groups, stopping illegal weapons deals. We keep his skills from the World War II era, but, you know, give him a modern update with new technology, you know, that helps him pinpoint his opponents and strategize. And the storylines, like I said, are globe-spanning as he travels around doing good on every continent. So, you know, someplace different every issue. And, you know, from time to time, his thoughts turn back to his brother Harry, and he always remembers what he said, that, you know, one person in the right place could mean the difference in winning a battle.
Nice. I also put him in the contemporary era to fit with my concept, mostly reusing the IP for me, because I see this as a globe-trotting book just like you, takes us to different parts of a war, in this case, following a soldier who transforms to fit any given area. So this month, he's a warrior from Skartaris. The next, he's an occult-powered fighter in Badnesia, or he's an underwater trooper in Atlantis, or he might even be like a plant avatar in The Green. All of these things are involved in our world at war. So he doesn't know why it's happening. It's a big mystery, but it's his destiny to fight in each of these theaters. And, you know, so he buckles down and does his duty.
Wow, that is imaginative. I like that.
Yeah, I was going to say this big story arc idea is going to really draw us in.
I know. I'm intrigued.
There are enough warriors of different eras in this book that's what gave me that idea. Well, here's another one, Valda, right? The book, in my case, will be called Iron Maiden, and it really does star Valda, a knight from the time of Charlemagne who has been brought forward by the Omega Stone, and not alone. There's a region around Markovia in Central Europe that's been transformed into the medieval setting that we see in Eric, and she's its champion. You've got modern countries trying to take back this land, but Valda doesn't think it's the peasants' fault if this has happened, so she means to defend them, and we're seeing modern weapons of war that she sees as magic, but it's Valda. You know, she's seen as bad or worse. So we get a kind of a Wonder Woman feel in a way, but like the warrior princess type character. But I wouldn't change her from the way she was characterized in the old book.
I can see that. I like the description there. And I do love a good sword and sorcery adventure and absolutely love strong female character. So it was easy for me to think of several ideas for this character. At first, I thought of, you know, a wandering knight from the original timeline, protecting those in need. But I ended up, here's my pitch, going to go with a modern-day update inspired by The Highlander, where she is one of many knights where she's engaged in secret battles, kind of in the shadows. And I have her cast as a historian and an antiques dealer who collects and sells medieval armor and weapons. And I love the image of her in the Who's Who issue, and I'm going to kind of do an updated version where she's got cool boots where she hides a knife in it, and then she wears scarves that flutter a bit like a cape, so kind of going for that image there. She'll still be able to summon the ghost of Amadis to continue teaching her more skills and to have a bit of companionship when she's out on the road. And of course, eventually, her path will cross with Arrak, and I want them to have adventures together and a bit of a romance. So that's where I'm headed with that title.
I like it. And we both went for a little bit of Wonder Woman in there. Antique Stealer.
Yes.
Sounds like it's a shade from, Diana. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
What did you guys do with Vartox?
Well, Vartox for me, it's funny because, again, going off on other things from my past that I like, Vartox made me think of Valerian, which is the French science fiction comic. And there was even a recent movie. I'm a big fan of Valerian. I have the comics that I've read many times. I'm one of the few people I think that really likes the movie. And I just sort of imagine Vartox, you know, traveling in space with, you know, a neat, cool spaceship, you know, a variety of missions. He's battling space creatures in one story, defending the needy in the next. You just never know what he's going to deal with. He's traveling with Illyria, and they have a recurring nemesis who is his former partner, Serena. So, but she always manages to escape in the end, so they can battle again another time. And for this one, I mean, it was so visual to me as I was thinking about it, because I'm thinking of the Valerian comics, but I'm also thinking of my love of Flash Gordon by Al Williamson. So I'm thinking of sort of maybe a retro art style like that as well. You know, lots of different spaceships and planets, spacesuits. It's just exciting to me. And then maybe throwing in an occasional nod to his origin in Superman by maybe having, you know, these sometimes little silhouettes in the background that look a bit like maybe a Max Flesher Superman, or maybe him having little side comments, you know, about something being faster than a speeding bullet or more powerful than a locomotive. Just little hints.
You're speaking my language, because I grew up on Valerian, right?
Ah, super.
Excellent.
Well, all of those, I guess I want to say seminal. I've fallen off the wagon in terms of, you know, what Euro comics are today.
Right, right.
But the old ones, Tintin, Asterix, Lucky Luke, and here it's hard for me to actually say them in English, but Valerian was one of those, and it was harder to find, so I don't have as many in my collection, but of course I read them at the library, so I also quite enjoyed the movie because there was a nostalgic blast to it, you know, it was a hoot. For me, Vartox, one comic I loved was Palmiotti and Connor's take on him in the Power Girl comics.
Oh, okay.
I'll be hiring them. I'm an editor. I can do that. I'm hiring them to do the same kind of thing on a Vartox solo book. He's a space Lothario who has a lot to learn about modern women, but he can't help falling in lust or in love with various DC heroines and villainesses. So he's just escaped from War World. That's why he's in our corner of the galaxy. And he's a bit hard up at the moment. But, you know, Power Girl and Wonder Woman, Valda, etc., they're all a little busy right now. Okay, Vartox? Layoff. So it's a comedy series, obviously, but he's got a lot of power, so you can involve him in different adventures and parts of this war.
That's neat. I would have never thought or gone that direction, but it sounds fun.
You should check out those Power Girl comics where he shows up, because it's a funny... He's like the male Maxima to Power Girl Superman. That's how they play them, but a little more humor. All right, the Vagan system. Woo! These are the exciting ones. So this one is even more of a comedy series for me. My title for this entry is simply called Vagans, although it's going to look like it's written Vegans.
Oh, excellent. Love it.
Right? And so it's a jokey book, maybe even to the point of being written and drawn by Baltazar and Franco, something like that, with the Omega Men and all the aliens of the Vagan system finally finding peace. They don't have the Omega Stone anymore. I think the warlords of Okaara are due for a name change, you know? And therefore, they're getting into all sorts of amusing shenanigans that have charming happy endings, you know, multiple strips per comic. So this one is supposed to be a fun all ages, but really it's so obscure that it's targeted at older comics readers anyways, you know, the same charm as Tiny Titans.
Right? It sounded right up my alley. So yeah,
I like that. And I'm going with something light as well. Thinking about the genetic engineering and the corruption in the system, I'm imagining a fun heist series. So there'll be a group of genetically engineered rogues who go around the system pulling off impossible crimes, kind of in the vein of Now You See Me or one of my favorites, Lupin the Third. I want to use the space map. I love maps. So the map would be similar to the one that's in the Who's Who issue. So it's going to be the starting point for each new story in the comic, kind of to orient the reader as to what part of the space, you know, that we're exploring and where the story is going to be set. I like that to ground, you know, the opening there. And every heist will involve a number of different species who have different characteristics and powers that, of course, pose all kinds of challenges during the heist, and our rogues will have to use their wits to figure out surprising and funny and, you know, absurd ways to get their hands on the treasure in the end. That's what we've got in store.
Again, speaking my language, because you know how much I love heist movies and narratives.
We have a lot of things in common. We know that.
Yeah, that's true. We like a lot of the same things. But it's going to make it harder for me to pick a series at the end to buy.
Oh, I'm happy.
All right. We get two vigilantes in this issue. The first one, Greg Sanders or Saunders, depending. The original Golden Age one. What do we do with the original vigilante?
Well, for me, this was a fun one to think about. I had to chuckle at the description. I'll be honest. I'm not very familiar with this version of the vigilante. As I was reading it, I just latched onto this idea of the dual life of a country singer and a vigilante. And before I knew it, I was just imagining a series that sort of is a crossover between Roy Rogers and the Lone Ranger, since the costume's so much like that. So I imagine him, you know, out in open vistas, out in the West, tracking down criminals. At night, he sits around his campfire, you know, strumming his guitar and writing new songs. I think it would be fun to actually pick a writer for the book who's good with lyrics. So that's sort of like in each issue, by the end of that issue, you've got a new verse of the song. And then every two or three issues, you've got a whole new song for the audience. And I just thought that would be sort of a neat little thing to put together. And then plus, this one was just sort of neat to me because we lived in Southern California quite a few years ago for a while. And I actually worked in a town that was right beside Apple Valley, which is where the Roy Rogers and Dale Evans Museum is. So I used to drive by that all the time. So it was just a natural fit for me and just seemed like a fun title. I don't know if I would read it myself very much, but it was fun to think about.
It's a fun bonus feature as well. I love these kind of bonus features that you're always happy to see, but not a lot of books take time to do that sort of stuff. And I like to include them in Who's Editing just because, you know, we don't care. It doesn't matter. Number of pages, whatever. Personally, I'm a fan of this version of the vigilante. I think it was one of the better looking Golden Age strips at DC, or one of the companies that became DC. In this case, I'm leaving the war behind for a minute. I want Greg Saunders to just be a contemporary hero in the American Southwest with little to no changes otherwise. I think, like you said, I think this concept is pretty original in itself. Mm-hmm. So he's a country singer. I also want him to be a stuntman / gunslinging expert.
Ooh. Nice.
He teaches movie stars how to make gunplay look cool. I watched a documentary not long ago where there was like a guy doing that sort of stuff. So that inspired me, which also gives him a flexible schedule. Oh. So he can fight crime in the desert states wearing that classic movie cowboy outfit he stole from a studio, you know. He's driving that refurbished motorcycle. It's very much the classic vigilante, but instead of the Golden Age, it's today. Modern, but pulpy. I think you said Lone Ranger. Totally. I think that's basically what I want to do. A modern Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
He's always on the move. He's going from gig to gig, and that gives him an excuse to be that character.
This just, I love your use of the word pulp, because that's just perfect for this sort of title. It's like, you know, it may not be on the top of my pull list, but this would be a book that I know would be fun anytime I picked it up. So, yeah, I really like this idea.
Vigilante 2, now this is the character that I don't have much connection to. You know, it was like a comic stores only, direct market only. Never got it where I lived, so I never got into it. And a lot of people have worn this suit, right? So I'm making this, I mean, it's not because there's going to be multiple people dressed like this in it, but I'm making this an anthology called Vigilantes.
Mm.
Well, we follow different vigilante types, heroes. I mean, let's make money. Let's front it with a member of the Batman family for sales. and then the other vigilantes are in different cities across the DCU. We've got Adrian Chase, this one, in a kind of law and order procedural. We got The Question doing conspiracy stuff. We've got a version of Gravedigger, who would be a vigilante in one of the war theaters, taking it out on fascists. And the Adrian Chase vigilante should be the regular feature throughout the life of the book to pay tribute to this entry. But others can have one-offs or short arcs, and you know, they give their pages over to someone else, and we keep a rotation going.
That is clever.
That's my vigilantes. What about you?
Love your idea. I'm making a little list of what I'm going to buy at the end, and it's growing. Okay. So for Vigilante 2, I'm going to make this title by crossing over the legal aid defense attorney who fights for good causes in court during the day. But of course, he's fighting attorneys who are paid megabucks and they work for unscrupulous corporations. So when he finds he can't win in court because of that underhanded nature of the big corporations, he will go after them at night as the avenging vigilante. So, you know, he's a bright guy and he is strong. So solutions to beating the bad guys will take a combination of that, you know, the brains, the brawn, and that's going to be what serves him well and pays off at the end.
Daredevil meets Ally McBeal.
Yes. That is a really concise way of putting it.
I was going to say, there's the elevator pitch.
Yes.
Although I named two defense attorneys or civil attorneys, you know, they're not, neither of them were DAs. I like the idea. I mean, that makes so much sense, right? The lawyer who doesn't get justice in the courtroom, and so he goes out and gets it. Viking Commando. Let's get into those Viking. Well, no, this is our second Viking, because I consider Valda, she's not quite a Viking, but I consider Valda Viking parallel. So Viking Commando, what do we do?
It's neat. Like you said, there are several Vikings in this, but that's okay with me, because I always enjoyed Viking stories growing up, you know, books, comics, movies, anything like that. So I'm always happy with a good Viking story. So for this one, I went rather traditional, I think, on this, but maybe with a modern spin. At first, I thought about bringing him to modern times, and then I decided, no, I want to leave the Viking Commando in the past. And I want to do sort of a gritty adventure action series in the veins of the recent TV show The Vikings, or, you know, something like that. You get a little bit more gritty, down-to-earth sort of historical action adventure. But at the same time, you get a little bit of, you know, what you would want in a comic book. Maybe, you know, he's always attacking at night or on misty, foggy mornings, that sort of thing. So you get some really neat art styles, I think, that way. So it's an action series, but also it's leaning heavily into Nordic warriors and characters battling together, you know, against the enemies to protect their land. And I think it would be nice to bring in some, you know, real historical elements to it that we can set the stories within.
So not even World War II?
Nope. I will leave him all the way hundreds of years further back.
10th century or whatever.
Right.
Okay. I'm keeping that for, like, Viking Prince is more like that for me. Well, we'll see. Viking Commando, obviously I've got a war going on. So as part of the event, Skartaris has spilled out of the North Pole. One of the places it's reached is that isolated magical Norse realm that in Scandinavia that JLI's ice is supposedly hails from. So they go to war, and the two powers' wizards cast a spell that confines the two lands to a bubble that no one else can leave. Well, no one, no one can leave or enter, except maybe the unknown soldier. The Viking commando is a Norse warrior that gets caught outside the bubble, and so he joins the American Armed Forces because a Viking warrior won't be denied the thrill of battle. We'll have him impressing his unit with his skills, even though he's essentially a man out of time, and there'll be a visual dissonance by setting his book primarily in the conflict with Curac. I want to involve Curac in this. So it's a desert environment, mm-hmm. but a Viking warrior. People would be surprised to learn that, you know, Vikings were in that part of the world historically, but we don't think of them that way. So we'll play with those contrasts.
Neat. You got me with Skitaris on that one. So
yeah. Yes.
And then I like the idea of, you know, tapping into them being all the way in the Middle East, you know, hundreds of years ago. And another sort of educational point, which I always enjoy learning something in my comics.
And Skitaris, of course, has to feature prominently because this is the warlord issue, you know?
Yes.
We'll come back to, in fact, we're coming back to it right away. Viking Prince, this is the book that's going to tell the Skitaris Norse conflict. I call the book Ragnarok, and it opposes the Viking Prince, who, though he's born in the modern day, might as well be a historical character like this one. It might as well be exactly John or Jon, probably, the Viking Prince. And Deimos is on the other side. Mm. He commands the forces of Skitaris. Whereas Warlord, you ask, he gets his own series, so you'll have to wait. So this is an epic war story, a war fought with ancient weapons and magic. It's highly strategic. There are moments of diplomacy. I think surely not everyone in Skitaris is on Deimos' side. So we follow the leaders, the decision makers. They're often on the front line anyway. I mean, these cultures. And we also get to care about specific soldiers on both sides who are carrying out military operations. In terms of Skitaris, we're probably looking at the rebels, people we actually know from the old Warlord series. In either way, I imagine this would have a feel and look that is similar to Brian Wood's Northlanders. You know, it's taking place today, but it's in that bubble. So it's part history, part fantasy. I think this is the one that's going to feel like historical Vikings. If, in your case, you sent the, you know, you kept the Viking commando in the past, are you putting the Viking prince forward somehow?
Oh, good question. I would say this is going to take a high seas adventure angle. So still kind of in the past where there's, you know, myths and legends and monsters. So with our Viking prince, I imagine the series involving him sailing the oceans to achieve 12 tasks, you know, similar to the origin there. There's going to be lots of sea monsters, storms, treasure to find, and foes, of course, to defeat. And what it brought to mind for me is a favorite comic of mine, Thorgal, which is a fantasy adventure. It's a European comic. And similar to that, we're going to feature a lot of Norse and Atlantean mythology. Still, being a fan of Thorgal and the art style there, it will feature, you know, the similar approach with a very detailed illustration style that will help showcase the ships and the clothing and the weapons and the nature and the animals and everything of that time. So I really have that, you know, as inspiration for this and really see lots of kind of fantasy adventure in these stories.
You can see that we like our Vikings in the past.
Yes.
No, yeah, and that's totally fair. And if I didn't have this concept going on, I probably would have done much the same because I'm also a big fan of Vikings. I wouldn't say I watch like a lot of Viking shows or whatever, you know, but in terms of like fiction in general, in my role-playing games, we got Vikings going on right now as we speak. You know, my players are going through some Viking cultures and clashes between Viking clans. So they're close to me. And there was a book I read when I was a kid that for a while, I sort of imagined myself as a reincarnation of Leif Erikson or something. Because in the book, the kid had, you know, was remembering, was dreaming his past life. And it was the past life of Leif Erikson. So I thought I was playing the kid in the movie version. You know, when I read, I was like imagining myself in his place. So for a while, I was like... I had like this notion.
Oh, it sounds like a fun, imaginative place to be.
And Leif Erikson, you know, discovered, or, you know, for Europe, discovered Atlantic Canada. So that just makes sense. All right, who's next It's Vixen.
Vixen for me and for our book here is going to be a classy fashion model who solves high-end crimes in the world of the rich and the famous. So it'll be globe-trotting adventure because her work will take her, of course, to all the high-fashion cities around the world. We'll see Paris, we'll see Milan, New York. Got to go to Venice because I love Venice, so that'll be there too. And there will be clues to the crimes and the thefts, so the readers, as they're going through the comic, will feel like they really have a chance of solving the mysteries. So there are going to be clues. It's going to be good old-fashioned mystery style. I know that she will be using the proceeds of her work to help combat poaching and protecting endangered animals, because those are always going to be things that are close to her heart and, you know, charity causes that she wants to champion.
I would read this.
Oh, yay.
Because I think Vixen should have her own series. This is one character that I don't understand why she doesn't have more traction with comics readers or with comics publishers. Yep. I don't know. But this is a great place to put her, what you've done here. And we just talked about on the network, we talked about the Maze Agency as far as Fair Play whodunits recently. Mm-hmm. So I've got that in mind saying, yeah, that'd be a cool way to do it. I'm sending her back to Africa, though, because it's the war, right? So Gorilla City has joined the war against the outside world. No doubt, Grodd is back in charge. The premise, I agree, is goofy, so I want this to be a fun and colorful, leaning towards comedy kind of series. I certainly want to expand the animal abilities that Vixen's able to summon, so I'm breaking out the safari cards. There is a lot of fun to be had with gorilla characters. We'll see Monsieur Mala, we'll see Titano, some deeper simian cuts might join the action as well. And on Mari's side, occasional guest stars like Freedom Beast and Batwing, you know, from that area, or that continent, not to call it an area because it's huge. Vixen has a lot to deal with in addition to all this. I want her to be trying to get her own modeling agency started, so I want that fashion stuff and a reason to move around. I also want paper dolls at the back of the book.
Oh, that's nice.
I've always liked that. And she's also trying to reconnect with her family in Zambesi. And of course, Vartox. Vartox is going to show up to try to woo her at some point.
Oh, love it.
Viken the Black. Okay, so here's our fourth world character. Obviously, I was going to put the fourth world in our worlds at war. It just makes sense. And Viken is how we get in. Looking at my pitches, both, you know, the ones I've already talked about and the ones that are coming up, the one continent that didn't get anything was Australia, or that whole region. So, okay, we got Darkseid. He wants the Omega Stone, probably to explore its connection to the anti-life equation, if any. It's certainly the anti-peace equation. So he boom tubes Vermin Vunderbar, since he's in this issue, and a parademon battalion to take over Java. And from there, launch offensives on Australia and Southeast Asia. So, okay, enter the Forever People who combine into the Infinite Man to stop them. But something strange happens, and Viken becomes the Infinite Man. There's no trace of his friends in the Matrix. So he renames himself the Forever Man.
Oh.
That's the name of the book. And in a big cosmic Kirby pastiche, he fights Darkseid's forces alone, while his quirky mother box, who is played for comedy, helps him find the other Forever People who may have been scattered across the planet. So we got that as a subplot going on as well.
I really like the idea of the mother box as comic relief.
She's got to have something to do. So I know that we talked about this before, and Viken was maybe your hardest egg to crack.
Yeah, Viken the Black was really tough for us because we just haven't really read much of Jack Kirby's Fourth World. So this was a real struggle. So we sort of took it as we thought, okay, let's pick up with Viken and the other members of the Forever People have been mysteriously summoned back to Earth after a long time away. And we get sort of some catch up for our readers on them as they're catching up with each other. And I think that was us struggling with, like, help us understand you. So we thought we'll help our readers the way we need the help. But we decided to do sort of a spin on this to make it a very scientific focused title, to give, you know, some different approach there. Viken and the other Forever People would form a scientific consulting company where, you know, they're using those scientific skills and expertise to solve, you know, the world's problems. He's able to use his magna power and his ability to detect atomic patterns and stuff like that in this. And we envision the mother box as just sort of a not very different than how it's described, which is sort of an AI computer. But in this case, you know, one that's sort of very science focused and helping to combine science and superpowers to help stop the villains and protect the Earth. So that was the pitch we came up with as a struggle.
It can be tough. I mean, it can be tough. It's been proven. Very few people have been able to make the fourth world work well, right, even in published comics,
yep,
especially the Forever People. A lot of people say the Forever People was like the book that really didn't work from word go, that it was like the worst of the fourth world. I personally don't agree. I love the Forever People as Kirby did them. I'm not sure I like them in later stories. You know, that I feel exactly the same way. It's like a lot of people have tried to make these characters work and it's like something escapes them. But I think generally I've done pretty well on this show, showing my love for them and giving them a new lease on life, even though it's often very much divorced from the Kirby origins. Viken, at least, is a forever person, and so people remember that group.
Yes.
I'm not sure too many people remember the Wanderers. Mm. Remind us who they are by showing us who they could be.
All right. I'm going to take a stab at this one, thinking that it would make a terrific galaxy-spanning series of adventures. There's a varied group of characters to work with. They've got a cool-looking ship. They battle villains. They save people from planetary catastrophes. And I know I'm going to be reading this title, so the more I got into it, the more I could use my imagination. So I'm looking forward to it. The title is going to pick up at a time when there's a powerful nemesis that has somehow taken and scattered all of the members of the Wanderers around the galaxy, and each of them has lost some of their memories. So we're going to be on a journey. Their paths start crossing by chance for some of them. Others, they end up meeting because they go back to places that seem important to them and their memories, and they're trying to put things together in their mind. So eventually, over the course of the series, all of them will gather. They'll put all of those pieces of the puzzle together on the table and kind of realize what has happened. And once they're reunited, they are going to set off and find this mega villain, take care of that, and get some revenge.
I like the amnesia element. That's going to create like a mystery. Always lovely, a mystery to carry people from one issue to the other. Mine came with War World. Mongol never even realized he had these stowaways. But there's actually a whole society of space vagabonds out there who hop aboard ships for various reasons. Some are running from something. Others are towards something. Some just want to see the universe. Next stop, Earth. But, you know, Earth at war. So Earth has seen better days and there aren't a lot of outgoing flights. So this group of Wanderers are more or less based on these guys in the entry, the originals, these different powers and looks, but they are perhaps more eclectic in terms of motivation and culture. So they're stuck on Earth for the time being, and the series caters to each of their subplots while also involving them in countering Mongols' plans for our planet. But it's going to be like a series about refugees, space hobos, people stuck in a place. I don't know. I almost want to give it a feel of, people stuck in an airport terminal and having to share their lives with one another, because that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, nice concept.
You had me at space vagabonds, and then later you added space hobos.
Yeah, they leave little marks on the spaceships and they'll tell you that. Okay, we're up to Warlord here. And I get to go first according to this order. I'm kind of the edge of my seat to find out what you've done with them. For me, I'm calling this series Warlord, Our World's at War, because this is where the overarching story happens. Travis Morgan has been cut off from Skartaris, like I said, so he has a strong incentive to find the Omega Stone and put an end to this conflict, release his homeland, rejoin Tara, who may or may not be in Deimos' power at this point, right? Mm. To do this, Morgan goes around the world questing for the stone, making huge moves in different conflicts across the globe, truly changing the course of the war wherever he goes. So this is the flip side to the Unknown Soldier. One is covert and this one is overt.
Yes.
So once the year is done, we can remove the subtitle and Warlord can keep going if his cred has been restored enough that an ongoing feels necessary.
Always.
Yes, absolutely. No doubt.
I laugh at the idea of the warlord being covert. You were really smart not to go that direction.
No way. He's the Lord of War. I'm really painting him as this. Like, he's the Lord of War and like Captain Atom during Invasion, commanding forces of superheroes and other forces throughout the length of this year-long story.
I like it as sort of like a defined length. And like you said, you know, if it remains successful and original by that point in time, it can continue on. But you've got a beginning, middle, and end planned. I like that.
What about yours?
So for us, you know us well, as we've already talked. You know that from our point of view, the Warlord's already a perfect title, so why would you want to mess with it at all? So
sure.
What I decided to do, though, is I thought, oh, let's do something different. Sort of what we were thinking of is, what would be a story arc that Mike Grell might have done with the Warlord, and could we spin that into a long-running maxi series or even an ongoing series, you know, can come back at any point in time that we want to. The way I imagined it, it was going back to my childhood and remembering a movie I loved and thinking about, well, you know, since the Warlord is all about Travis Morgan going into the underworld at the center of the earth, just imagine this movie I loved as a kid, The Incredible Shrinking Man, and I come up with The Incredible Shrinking Warlord. So here he's shrinking down to microscopic size into this whole other world that is, again, you know, smaller and inside of the world that we live in. So he's going to have challenges in traveling. He's going to have, you know, trying at time to communicate and interact with his former friends. But of course, you know, we know how difficult that's going to be. But he's finding new allies in this really strange microscopic world. It's going to have this, you know, same adventurous feel as the original Warlord. It's going to shine through and, you know, make you feel like you're in the same type of adventure. It's just really bizarrely different. We got to keep the art style the same. So, you know, we'll pick out somebody who can do Mike Grell style, and we'll lure Mike back to actually do the covers. So that's what I would do.
And great movie to base this on, you know. Great effects for that time. It was amazing, I thought.
Absolutely right.
And doesn't go where you think it might either. So
it does not.
That's a recommendation for the movie, and it's, I think, a recommendation for the title. Next up, we got to flip a few pages here because and we get to the Wayne Foundation, which I put on the list. It's a non-HQ location. What would you do with the Wayne Foundation?
Well, I thought of something fun. I thought, for the Wayne Foundation, let's cross over the ideas of something like Indiana Jones meets The Librarians meets Warehouse 13. So it's an adventure series where we've got a team of people going out and about in the world investigating artifacts. They're tracking them down, these artifacts that have special powers or mysterious, you know, essences. They're trying to keep them out of the hands of the villains who are wanting to do, you know, no good with them. Meanwhile, as they're doing all this work, they're sort of doing it covertly, because they're doing all this in the guise of doing charitable work. So they're out there across the world doing charitable work for the Wayne Foundation, but underneath, this is what's really going on. So the artifacts are going to be spectacular. They'll range from deadly weapons to mysterious artifacts to maybe something even absurdly funny for an issue that does strange things. Can involve time travel, X-ray vision, things that can foresee the future. A light, fun adventure series with a lot of camaraderie.
That's more adventuresome than mine. But mine is also light and comical, I guess. An office comedy drama about the people working for Bruce Wayne. So Bruce and Lucius Fox can appear, sure, but it's really more about the mid-level employees working at cubicles, you know, reacting to what's going on in Gotham and across the worlds at war. I'm not going to recommend the recent DC event Night Terrors to anyone, but the Joker issues are actually pretty interesting. It's a dream, but they have the Joker working at Wayne Enterprises. There's lots of bureaucracy, office politics, and then you get the Joker in there, like being promoted. It's not exactly a template for my series, but there's stuff in there that I would borrow from. There should definitely be an old supervillain with an assumed identity in the lot. Maybe Bruce Wayne, you know, gave him a second chance or something. Or maybe it's more sinister, who knows. There's someone should make a connection between the Foundation and Batman's activities and wonder if they maybe should keep it to themselves and have like that dilemma. Mm-hmm. Oh, and there's one issue where we see that tree that's growing in the middle of the building. Mm. It turns into Yggdrasil, the Norse mythology's great world ash.
Yes, nice.
And that leads to a Viking attack from the Ragnarok book. You can connect it that way, you know. So it's outlandish. It's like crazy stuff happening to normal people. A little bit Astro City, but more humorous than that.
I really like that idea. I mean, you've integrated your story arc so well, bringing things back. And every time you drop something like that, I just think, oh, wow, you know, this is an editor who's really looking at the big picture. Very, very nice job. And then I also must say that I think Ruth and I sort of looked at each other because we might be the only two people in the world that enjoyed that TV show Powerless from a few years ago.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I liked it as well. Yeah.
So it made me think a little bit of that. So I think I would enjoy it.
Right. Because they work for a subsidiary of Wayne Enterprises, right?
That's right.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. All right. The Whip is next. So if Vigilante was rather gritty for me, so I think like City Lights, Prairie Justice, I didn't mention it, but it's City Lights, Prairie Justice was a good template for that, you know, that miniseries. The Whip is going to be pure fun, but otherwise they're a lot alike. I love The Whip. I don't want to change him, except maybe I'll make him Latino, actually Latino, mm-hmm. and not like a white man. He's a Zorro type in the modern day, in modern day Mexico, I think. He rides a horse, he whips bad guys into shape. I want the art to be more stylized than this entry because it was pretty stylized back in the 40s. It's a strip that I like to look at, and the action would be over the top. The fact that there was a 19th century whip as well. He was inspired by a 19th century version of the whip. I think that's a good hook for past lives type stories, you know, just like in Starman, to show that era as well, connecting the current whip to his legacy. But I think we're mostly going to have fun with this one.
I'm going to read that. And I'm also going to read my version, which is, you know, similar as far as the Zorro inspiration. And as a lifelong fan of Zorro, it's easy to know, you know, what I'm going to do with the series. Basically, the whip will be my Zorro. He's going to be set in the past. He's going to ride out at night, fighting for the rights of the oppressed. And it must be done in the art style of Alex Toth, in my opinion. That's who we're hiring. There's going to be some historically accurate information. It's kind of the colonization and kind of that time period of expansion on the West. And it will also have a good sense of fun and adventure. You know, the horses, the bad guys, get a sword in there too, along with the whip.
I just think it shows what a classic character Zorro is. He's sort of perfect as designed because both of you really sort of kept that core. It's interesting. Ruth set the character in the past, which Siskoid, you set him in the future, but with that previous 19th century version that you could go back to. And I love the fact that, you know, you both can envision him in either time period because the character is just perfect.
Yeah, and it's a network classic. I think it was Secret Origins that, you know, Ryan, there was one origin for him, of course. Ryan put a sound effect that you've probably heard by this point. I probably put it in into this show. But I have a lot of fond feelings for The Whip. All right. The White Witch is next. So what do we have here?
So this is it's time for the team up section of our suggestions, because we're going to take the White Witch, but we're also going to jump a character or two ahead and pull in Wildfire. And we're doing a team-up book about the White Witch and Wildfire. It just sprang, the idea of putting those two together just created in me the idea of The Fugitive, another TV series and movie that I like. So these are two heroes on the run. They've been falsely accused of wrongdoing. And then again, maybe I shouldn't say they're on the run since they both can fly. Maybe they're in flight trying to get away.
On the fly.
So we're going to keep the series light and fun. I think of this as a comedy series with some adventure. It's not adventure first. The two are infrequently a at a disadvantage. The White Witch, you know, can't cast spells fast enough, you know, before the villains can escape and get away. Meanwhile, Wildfire's containment suit was damaged in his initial escape, and he's constantly having to make repairs and adjustments to it because it just doesn't work correctly. And I got that idea just envisioning the greatest American hero who never figured out how to use his flying suit. So I'm just thinking of that along these lines. So it's really a fast, fun, lighthearted adventure, suspense, near capture, as you can even imagine, like the old 60s Batman TV series sort of approach to this.
In the 30th century.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm saying that because I didn't put the White Witch in the 30th century. I think I was inspired by the pink magic effects for this one. Because I thought Badnesia. Uh-huh. It's in the throes of a civil war that could unleash thunderbolts, which are also very pink, on the entire world if the wrong side wins. So we have a new White Witch, or a precursor White Witch, if you prefer, like a 21st century White Witch, as a one-woman resistance trying to stop the evil sorceress cabal from winning in a book that's going to explore the war's weird magical corner and build up Badnesia as a mystically rooted Eastern European religious orthodoxy that may not be any kinder than the regime that wants to supplant it, right? So either way, you know, White Witch is like, am I protecting the status quo here? Or like, which side? Both sides are bad.
Absolutely.
It's Badnesia. So both sides are bad. So I think it could be interesting to see her in a real moral quandary and finding solutions that really are, you know, outside the box.
Neat.
All right. Wildcat is next. And the first Wildcat, in my case, one of the ones I knew immediately what to do with him. Because my favorite comic I read this year was Daniel Warren Johnson's Do a Power Bomb. I'm not interested in pro wrestling, but it's a wrestling story set on a cosmic stage with terrific art, and it even managed to make me cry.
Oh, wow.
So I don't mind admitting it. I'm taking a cue here from the Justice League Unlimited episode where Wildcat is in a superpowered fight club.
Yeah.
And so I'm putting my Wildcat in stories that would have that the feel and look of Do a Power Bomb, hopefully with Johnson as writer artist. Wildcat goes up against all sorts of fighters from all those worlds at war and beyond because he's addicted to it, or maybe he's just faking it to get to the top. Who is in charge of these underground matches? Who's paying to watch? Who can Wildcat follow up the pipeline so he can bring them to justice? A little bit Squid Game, but it is like an MMA kind of thing. If you do like real superpowered fights and make it crazy like Do a Power Bomb was.
I really enjoyed that. I have not read the comic that you were talking about from this year, but I do remember that episode of Justice League Unlimited very well. And just thinking about, you know, like movies like Fight Club and stuff like that, it's just, I think you've got a really good idea for a title that a lot of people would like.
What are you doing with Wildcat?
Well, as I said earlier, we're into the team-up section. So this is our one other team-up. So we're going to combine Wildcat and Wildcat 2 into a new series called Wildcats. So if you didn't see that's coming, it's a series because we're huge fans of film noir. So I'm imagining a classic styled film noir in the vein of Sam Spade or Mike Hammer. And we've got these two characters. So Yolanda Montez is our journalist. She has lots of informants and connections to crime syndicates that, you know, she's used to, lots of people on her, you know, that she knows to go to get little tidbits on the side. And meanwhile, her uncle, Ted Grant, is running a gym. It's got a mix of everyday people that come in, as well as criminals informants who might come in. Maybe they're coming in to work out. Maybe they're just coming in to sell or get some information. And this way, he ends up with some interesting connections. And when the two of them get together, they're at a great advantage because they've both gotten little bits of information from different places, so they can go out there and really make a difference in this, you know, film noir type world. And of course, sticking with that noir motif, we've got to find an artist who's really good at using shadows and light, an artist that likes to use a lot of silhouettes because it just has to set that mood as if it was a film noir movie in black and white.
I mean, the boxer is really a film noir archetype, you know, so that works quite well. For me, Wildcat 2, Eclipso has risen again in the South American country of Parador, and he's turned it into a training camp for superhuman terrorists who want to capitalize on what's going on. Parador's ancient jaguar god isn't too happy about this, and it's resurrected and or assembled a group of cat warriors led by Yolanda Montez, who was originally killed by Eclipso, that's how I got to that point, to fight these threats before they unleash havoc on the world. So the group includes Panther, Shakira, she's also out from Skartaris, you know, Cheetah, redeemed, and a contemporary version of the Legion's briefly used cat's paw. Oh. So the team and the book are called, wait for it, the Feline Furies. Not furries, furies. If I follow up with Wildfire, you know, you did a good turn by putting him in a team-up book or in a, you know, in a buddy book.
Yeah.
Because it's tough to do Wildfire as a solo character.
Yeah.
No matter how much I like him or his look, you know, his condition means you can't give him a secret identity. Can't have normal subplots. So for all the importance he had in the 80s, when I was getting into Legion comics, the 90s largely ignored him, except he does have one standout story in 1996, and that's the Legends of the Dead Earth annual, which shows him surviving across the eras and keeping the Legion alive in some form. My book is called Legion of a Dead Earth. It has the Time Trapper, Time Snatch, the group, and drop it in the contemporary era to ensure the future, which is at risk if Earth destroys itself in this war of wars. Here we're focusing on members of 1988's invasion races that have stuck around, at least the ones with Legion connections. We got Kuns, Dominators, Durlans, that kind of stuff. They're still around taking advantage of this conflict, and it's up to Wildfire and his group to stop them. He resents having to follow the Trapper's playbook, though, and he questions his missions a lot. But I want this to generally recapture the feeling of the so-called Archie Legion, you know, young heroes. Wildfire plays mentor to them, but it's essentially their growing up, their coming of age. They're still in training. They're fishes out of water in this backwards era. And Wildfire is kind of the father figure to them.
Yeah, I really like that. I think you did a really good job with that character because you're right. It's tough to come up with a solo book. And I'm sure that's why we, you know, went the team-up book route, is it just seemed to be a good fit. But you came up with a book that I think is more imaginative than anybody's done anything with him in quite a while.
I'm impressed.
All credit to, was it Tom Pye or something, you know, who did that annual. I'm just continuing it from there.
There you go.
All right, next up is, well, actually our last hero is Wing.
So Wing makes me think of a fantasy action adventure series, and it's going to be in the style of Big Trouble in Little China. So something that's a bit campy, definitely lighthearted, and also a series with the right cultural tone. And the series is going to feature Wing as the lead hero who fights crime. And for him, he's got a lot of charisma, and he's often going to be able to influence people to do the right thing. You know, he's got the right influence and the right words, but when all of that fails on occasion, it's not enough to win people over. He's not afraid to fight and help the people that are in need.
And there's no Crimson Avenger in your version. So I like that. It's like he's his own man.
Yes. I did not want to have him be paired. So he's the lead. He's the solo guy.
So in Big Trouble in Little China, does he drive a semi-truck in Wayne?
Possibly.
I mean, at least once in the series, you got to have that as a sort of Easter egg.
A visual nod, at least. Yes.
Yeah. I did keep the Crimson Avenger in the game, but not for long. So imagine that the Crimson Avenger has been active for the past 10 to 15 years, not in the Golden Age. And he doesn't want to retire, but his sidekick does. So Wing says enough is enough, and he leaves. But the Crimson is investigating something he's kept from Wing. And he's forced to follow the clues to Hong Kong without Wing. He gets murdered there. So Wing becomes the new Crimson Avenger, that's going to be the title of the book, trying to solve the Crimson's murder while getting sidetracked by a triad war on the streets of Hong Kong. Hong Kong cinema, I mean, that's one of my major interests.
Yeah.
So this might be the one I'd write myself. In other words, it's also a good place to use the Untouchables concept from earlier in the issue, where we'd have a new triad using phasing technology to commit crimes and assassinations. And maybe that's the key to the murder mystery. Maybe not. So I'll leave that up to the actual writer of the series. But we both went with a Hong Kong, you know, chop socky kind of feel.
Yes. I do like that. And I think, you know, I didn't even make that connection because it was Big Trouble in Little China that popped into our mind. But we love Hong Kong action cinema. So, you know, it's no wonder that we have that connection. And as you were spinning your title, I was thinking, oh, this sounds fun.
I didn't think of it at the time, but it's also like the inspiration is kind of clear. Wing is really Kato from Green Hornet because the Crimson Avenger is really based on the Green Hornet. Who played Kato? Bruce Lee. Okay, there we go.
It all comes full circle.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah. So finally, we have the bonus series. It was optional. Did you have one?
We did not. I guess we felt that we had achieved our goal, like coming up with as many as we did, so we didn't tempt fate.
No weasel series. So Shag's going to be disappointed. I had one, but it's to like fill in the holes in my larger story. It's a book called War Wheel. And it's an anthology series that tells stories with superheroes and with mortal soldiers from across the whole Earth at War thing. Stories of heroism, of sacrifice, of the impact of war, especially on parts of the DCU that aren't otherwise represented in the line. So this is where we see Atlantis, Themyscira, Nanda Parbat, Dinosaur Island, things that I couldn't really fit into any of the individual stories. So it's also a good place to present the serialized origin of the Omega Stone and showing how across the aeons it's caused problems. This is really a support book to the entire event, but I think it's also the one that's most like the traditional war comics being anthologies, you know, with different characters.
Yeah, that's a really good idea to give that background to tie in, like you said, sort of the loose plot holes as you tie it together. That's a smart idea.
And that brings us to the end. So finally, we follow the well-established tradition that states that we have only enough money to buy one series from the other editor's line, or in your case, you get two.
Good.
And you can share.
Yay.
So which one will it be, Ruth?
Oh my goodness. You came up with so many good ones. I have so many notes.
She does.
Especially every
time. She has multiple post-it notes here that she's written down when she liked.
Every time you mentioned Skitaris, like, you got me. So I sort of have my guitarist category because that was called out with your Viking Commando story, the Viking Prince Ragnarok story. You know, that really appealed to me. And of course, Warlord. So got a cluster there. But then I'm also partial to a funny light title. So Vartox, I think that would have me laughing, as well as the Wayne Foundation concept. So just kind of sharing my initial thoughts, and we will narrow it down to two. But Darren, thoughts?
Are you able to, do you need more time to narrow yours down so you want me to go? All right, I'll go while you decide.
Yes.
She's sitting in the corner of the store, still flipping through on the spinner rack.
Right,
okay.
Right.
You better buy one. Buy one or get out.
So for me, I didn't take quite as many notes as Ruth did. I think I sort of tried to chime in on the ones that I really, really liked the ideas of as you went through. I mean, I mentioned the space vagabonds and the connection to Powerless that you did. But there were a couple that really stood out to me. I really liked what you did with Vixen. I agree with you that Vixen is a character that's, why can't they do something with her? They really should. Really, what it narrowed down to me is there were a couple that came really early on, and I was so sure I would not choose anything related to Vigilante, and yet what you wanted to do with the Vigilante and then what you wanted to do with Vigilantes, both were just really intriguing to me. But in the end, I'm sitting there like Ruth, and I'm almost buying one of those, but I put them down and I have to buy Valda. Because I love a strong female character. I love a Wonder Woman type character. And you just sort of spun a story with your Iron Maiden that's what I'm going to walk out the store with.
All right. You bought me enough time. I'm going to buy the Warlord. Just bringing all the Skitaris connections together into that one title and that main character for me that I have loved for so long. So give me your Warlord.
She's going to play this back for Mike Grell later, so he gives her a hug because that's what she always wants from him.
I mean, it's the one that tells the bigger story that all of these books are tying into. So if you're only going to buy one and you care about the whole story, that's the one you're sort of stuck with, right? I had like three main ones that I, you know, that was like my short list. And I mentioned Vixen in there, and I think Wing is probably in my top three. But ultimately, you had me at the, I don't know if we titled it, but the heist book set in the Vagan system. Whatever it's called, whatever that book is called.
Excellent. I'm glad you chose that one. It makes me happy.
So that was one of entirely Ruth's idea. So she's all smiles right now. I will never hear the end of this, Siskoid. And I think she was so pleased with herself for coming up with the idea. I don't think she came up with the title. So
no.
And I'm looking at the entry. I'm thinking, oh, what could it be called? You know, like something. I don't know. It depends what the crew are called, right?
Oh,
the
Right. We figure out who our rogues are and shape that up some more.
You named them Rogues. Forget about the Flash. It is a DC IP that we could use. Yeah. You know, it's called Rogues. Rogues Gallery, something like that. You know, they go out and commit crimes in the Vagan system. It's amazing what just happened, because it's a little bit what you were talking about, Darren, about actually being interested in vigilante, like for the first time.
Yeah.
It's often happened. It's like the Vagan system. That's the Omega Men, and Omega Men is a. There are a bunch of characters I don't care about. I've never really read the Omega Men. Every time I've tried, it's like, ugh, I don't really care about this. To pick an Omega Men related project, you have to recreate it, sell it to me in a new package that I just, that's what I wanted to go for.
Oh, you're just making her head even bigger now, Siskoid. I will really never hear the end of this.
Don't forget, this is all make-believe.
Oh, but so much fun.
Dear listeners, it's time for you to go to fireandwaterpodcast.com. Tell us what you think. Would you read any of these books? If you were in charge, what series would you offer using these characters? And if you like this content, think about visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/FW podcast, like Diablo Frank, who sponsors this show. I hope you had fun, Darren and Ruth.
Absolutely.
Oh, this was a blast.
Are you working on anything right now that you want to tell the folks about?
I'm working lots and lots, but not on anything fun. So
no podcast in the near future.
So please stand by for more in the hopefully very near future from Rad Adventures. But in the meantime, yeah, real life is in the way.
I mean, all the old content is there. And if you haven't heard it, it's new to you.
That is true.
Please visit.
Thanks for trying the experiment with me. Until next time, then. Who's editing?
We are.
A lady cop, you know, by herself is fairly boring. Put lady cop, you know, having a conversation with Warlord, that's like a whole different thing. And so I do sometimes write people off model. That's very.